I'll tell you about a mistake I made in communicating out that that cost me a promotion. So you can never be 100% transparent. What you can promise people and what you can do is you can promise people clarity. He was so excited about it, he decided to do it anyway. And then when it came around time for people to actually do something about it, they thought it had already come and gone.
What follows is a conversation with Gary Ross, a renowned communications expert, brought to you by Managers Club, your hub for navigating the exciting yet challenging world of engineering leadership. Gary unveils profound insights into the enigma of workplace communication, dissecting the reasons it often falters, the blunders we typically make, and how we can drastically improve. If you find this content helpful, don't forget to subscribe to our channel and share this video with others who might benefit. Today, we have a very interesting topic about the mistakes that people make in communications. I have with me Gary Ross, an expert in workplace communication. Welcome to Managers Club, Gary.
Hey, thanks a lot. It's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming. Let's go to first principles. Before we talk about the mistakes that people make, why do people have trouble? These are like smart people, engineering managers, leaders. Why do people have trouble communicating in the first place?
Yeah, sometimes it goes down to a lack of confidence or a feeling of a lack of experience in communicating, not knowing what they're allowed to say or not knowing what they're supposed to say and what exactly they want it is to get out of their communication. And so it winds up getting either gummed up or even worse, people decide not to communicate at all. And then all you get is radio silence and people start making up their own version of things and their own stories. And that's usually never as good as what the real situation is.
That's funny you say that. Yeah, people will make up stories just to fill in things. All right, could you share maybe what are some of the top mistakes that people make, you know, communicating in the workplace?
Well, yeah, there are several. So some of the mistakes that people do make, for example, are just communicating for the sake of communication. That's not necessarily always the best way to go. We want to be sure that we're communicating the right thing to the right people in the right way in the right time. And so how do we do that? We take a step back and we think about, okay, well, why do I need to communicate in the first place? What is the objective of my communication? What do I want the job of my communication to be? What's the best way to do that? Is it really an email that's the best way to do that? Because people are getting, I don't know, how many emails a day? Do you want it to get into somebody's cluttered email feed? Or maybe it's a quick phone call or video meeting or in-person meeting, depending on where you're working. Maybe it's a text, if that's something that you do in your workplace, and so forth. So thinking about the best ways to communicate, given what the objective of that communication is. So don't always follow the knee-jerk feeling or knee-jerk reaction of saying, oh, we need to communicate. I need an email by the end of the day. Really take a step back and think, what do I want this communication to accomplish and what's the best way to do it? And by the way, how do I make sure that I'm reaching the right people in the right way as well?
Yeah. So let me ask you about that. So I find as a manager, I have to repeat myself a lot, you know, because I'll say something and then there's always someone who didn't get it, didn't understand. I never heard that. So yeah, you could send an email and a lot of people won't read it. So talk to me, like, what is your approach like repeating yourself to making sure that communication is actually heard?
Yeah. So it depends on the best way to reach your team. And so sometimes it needs to be an email three times. Sometimes it's an email. Sometimes it gets mentioned in a staff meeting. And then the same thing will go up on digital signage or on a bulletin board, depending on whether it's a production facility of some kind. Thinking about different ways to reach folks, again, where they are. Thinking about communication, when you're communicating out to folks, you want to reach people where they are, not make them have to come to you. So think about ways your people are interacting with information and receive information.
What do you think is the best way these days to reach folks? You know, text message, messenger, email, like what do you think is the best way?
So again, it's going to where people are. So that depends on understanding your workforce and in this case, knowing your audience. If you're trying to communicate out to a bunch of people who work on in a production facility or work in a retail store or in a restaurant, email is probably not the best way to go. There, but then again, if you're trying to reach folks who are in front of a computer all day, then yeah, maybe it's email or maybe it's Slack. I know of people who have large portions of their employee base, they're professional drivers. They're driving constantly from a warehouse out to different facilities delivering product. And I know companies have done internal podcasts for those drivers to listen to as they're on the road. So it depends on where your people are and what the best way is to reach them. The overriding theme, though, is how do we break through the communications clutter that everybody is just absolutely bombarded with these days? And that there's really two things to think about there with the clutter. One is just getting people's attention. So think about, again, their daily experience, their universe, where are they getting information from? Go to where that is. But then the number two part about clutter is communication these days is in very short bursts. It's the Twitterification of communication. So we've got right. to communicate in 140 or 280 or whatever, how many characters it is these days, and in short little bursts. So thinking of ways to get through that clutter in whichever format makes the most sense for your folks.
You've coached a lot of people. Could you share with us a couple interesting stories in your experience of some miscommunications, some big miscommunications people have had, and maybe how they could have avoided it or done it differently?
Sure. Yeah. So there was about communicating to the right people and the right information to the right people at the right time in the right way. There was somebody I was working with who was launching a new system for purchasing in the organization, something that was kind of dry, but some people in the organization needed to do something differently with it. Not everybody, but only some people. He decided he needed to get the news out right away, before 8 months before the system was even going to launch. And we tried to suggest that he not do that because he's just going to confuse people by doing it, because there was nothing that people could do with it anyway. He wanted to communicate 8 months before it was launching. He was so excited about it, he decided to do it anyway. And then when it came around time for people to actually do something about it, they thought it had already come and gone. They were confused. They didn't understand what they needed to do. More than half the people he was communicating to didn't even have access to the new system. So they were confused, and it was just kind of a whole mess. And we had to kind of go back and redo the whole thing. So that was one case of somebody who didn't really think about the objective of the communication or his audience either.
Got it. Yeah, he communicated too soon. And by that time, people had, like you say, they had forgotten about it.
And to the wrong people.
And to the wrong people. So how have changes in the workplace, now a lot of people are remote or hybrid, right? They can't just go up to your desk and talk with you. How do you feel these kind of changes have affected communication or how to communicate effectively?
In some ways it's changed it, in some ways it hasn't. The way it's changed is that we've got to be a little more intentional about it. We can't just think to ourselves, oh, I can go run down the hall and go talk to somebody. I've got to be more intentional about saying what I need to say, and when I'm on a call, or then I've got to get somebody's attention and get them on a video call or what have you. What hasn't changed is the people on either side of the conversation, they're still the same people. And it's the same principles of knowing your audience and telling people stories and understanding that everything communicates. Those are my three number one rules of communication. Understanding that, that's still going to serve you well. It's the same people on either side of the technology. We're just doing it differently and have to be a little more intentional about it.
Okay. So talking about both people on, sides of the communication. So I work, and a lot of people that listen probably work with people in other countries. So they have different cultures and expectations. I even went as far as one point, I read a bunch of books about Asian culture just to understand how their mindset is different. So do you have, any examples or advice on dealing with cultural differences in your team and communicating?
In those cases, I think it helps to do a little bit of homework in advance. If you know that you're going to embark on a working relationships with folks in a different culture, then I think do some research beforehand, either online or talk to some folks in the organization that know some of the cultural sensitivities there, and find out what might be important and relevant to your work. And then make sure that you follow up on that as best as possible. I think also a little vulnerability and humility is okay too. So if you make a mistake or you fumble along the way, it's okay to say, "Hey, I'm trying. I'm doing my best." And apologies if anything came across as confusing.
I mean, can you share an example or two of this? Do you have any examples of this cross-cultural communication?
There are. Yeah, so there are times where I've worked with folks in, let's say, in Europe, where they're a little less direct or a little not as, I think, aggressive in some cases as folks in the United States might even be used to being or expecting it from other folks as well. And that's taken people back a little bit sometimes. And I see that. And then I try to back off a little bit if that's something that happens. So looking for those cues in those particular cases, if somebody seems to be taken aback by something, or if it's not necessarily doesn't seem to kind of compute on the other end, that's a good way to know that maybe it's best to kind of dial it back a little bit and maybe do a little bit more research into who it is you're working with.
Okay. Yeah. I think like you say about directness, dealing with different cultures, like in Europe, I mean, there's some countries where managers give very, very direct feedback to people and they'll just tell them this is wrong or I didn't like this. And lots of US managers are very polite. So I know a story where a European worker came and US manager was trying to be very polite and giving them feedback, which the manager thought was like negative feedback, constructive feedback. And the person, based on their culture, actually thought they were doing great because they were expecting if they were doing not so well, that they would get more direct feedback.
Yeah,
you have to keep that in mind.
Yep.
Go ahead, please.
I was just going to say in general, and not necessarily internationally, but in general, I think for new managers, it comes down to, again, that confidence about communicating and then understanding what communication can do for you. So if you're a new manager, you're in this new position of trying to get people to follow along with you on your vision. You're trying to inspire people to do particular kinds of work for you that you're envisioning your team will do. And good workplace communication is something that can enable you to do that. So inspiring people with a good story, for example, is one way to go ahead and do that. And I could talk about some storytelling examples and some ways that people have been brought along with stories along the way and helps increase buy-in and helps drive people to action.
I love stories. If you have a story example, I'd love to hear it. Then I have a couple more questions.
Yeah. So, well, first of all, how do you, some people are a little thrown by the idea of stories in the workplace. This is not about sitting around in a circle and around a campfire. This is using tried and true storytelling formulas and formats that have been around since caveman times to bring people along in the workplace and inspire them. So one way to do that is to answer, there are four questions to answer that can help you create the framework for a story. Where are we now? Where are we going? How are we going to get there? And what will it look like when we get there? So instead of a dry set of facts, let's talk for an example. Let's say there's going to be an office move someplace and you're moving your office across town. Instead of a memo coming out and saying, "Hey, we're moving an office across town. We expect everybody's desk to be packed up by Friday at 3:00. And we need you to come in on 2 hours on Saturday to set up your new office. And then on Monday, you'll be coming to the new office and and moving forward." Well, we've all seen dry memos like that, and that's not really inspiring, and it sure leaves a lot of questions. Instead, if you think about it in the form of a story, excuse me, where are we now? Where are we going? How are we going to get there? What's it going to look like when we get there? It's, you know, hey, we're out in an office right now, out in the suburbs. We need to be closer to our clients who are downtown in the city. That's where our competitors are. They're eating our lunch right now on business, and we've got to, it's tough right now for us, and the future of our office is in doubt because we're not performing very well. So that's where we are now. Where are we going? We're going to go to this brand new office in the city. It's in a great neighborhood, and we're going to get down there and be closer to our clients and be able to develop those personal relationships that are necessary. What will it look like when we get there? This is the picture of success. Our new office will be set up. We'll be in a vibrant downtown location. We'll be a lot closer to our customers. The performance of our office will improve. Our office will be in a more secure position within the company, and we're all more likely to continue working here, and the office is more likely to continue on. So you can see how something like that in telling a story is a lot more inspiring than just a simple dry set of facts of, hey, we're moving and we need you to do this. So you can apply that really to almost anything, even a one-on-one brief conversation. Think to yourself these four questions, which again, where are we now? Where are we going? How are we going to get there? What will it look like when we get there? And by thinking something through like that will help inspire folks. That is an age-old storytelling formula. If you think about one example of where that story is really used to a T is in The Wizard of Oz. Think about The Wizard of Oz. Okay. Where are we now? We're stuck in Oz. Where are we going? We're off to see the wizard. How are we going to get there? We're going to follow the yellow brick road. And by the way, the conflict and the challenge and the quest that's implied in all stories is implied there as well.
Let me ask you about, you know, earlier I said, you know, I had to repeat myself a lot. I found when I'm a manager, I have to repeat myself a lot as a parent too. How do you check understanding? I mean, you could tell someone, okay, like, tell me, what did I just say? But sometimes that doesn't really come across in a nice way. So what are good ways to check that? Okay, you've communicated, but the people really understand what you said.
Mm-hmm. You can engage in a conversation and you can listen for them to repeat things back to you. And you can listen for consistencies in what it is you're expecting and what it is that they're saying. If you're detecting some inconsistencies there, then it might be time to go back and either in the conversation itself, say, let me just reiterate what it is we're looking to do here. Or maybe it's over a period of time. And if it's over a period of time, then you can recalibrate your messaging and perhaps change it to simplify it. So hopefully what it is that you're looking to get across will register with the folks.
Okay. Since we have new managers who listen here, I want to talk a little bit about transparency. So managers have access to a lot of information and some things that they're not allowed to say or share. So what is your approach to communication transparency with your team, you know, when you have stuff that maybe you shouldn't say or can't say, or what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I don't like it when people promise transparency because it's something they can never deliver because of exactly what you just said. There are things that are confidential. There are things there are some personal aspects and so forth that you just can't talk about, whether it's for competitive reasons, regulatory reasons, ethical reasons, and so forth. So you can never be 100% transparent. What you can promise people and what you can do is you can promise people clarity. You can promise them, I will tell you everything I can tell you when I am able to tell you. And by doing that and by following through on that, and that's the important part, by following through on that, you start to generate trust and belief in what it is that you're talking about. Now that takes time. That has to happen over time. Again, by following through and doing what you say you're going to do. But that's the way to I think on for that is to not promise transparency because it's something that you can never really deliver.
I think that's really great. Promise clarity instead. I like the way you put that. A lot of what we talked about is about managing, to your peers or managing down to your team. We had an interesting conversation about managing up. Talk to me a little bit about mistakes people make in managing up and communicating up.
I'll tell you about a mistake I made in communicating up that that cost me a promotion, at least temporarily. I'll begin by saying, though, that by managing up, it's important to remember that folks are that senior executives, your boss and so forth, they're people, too. And too often people are too intimidated by title or perhaps the way some of these executives carry themselves and so forth. And they tend to stand on ceremony and stand on formality. That is not what a good senior executive is going to want. And I'll tell my little story about this. I was up for a promotion early in my career, and my direct boss wanted to promote me to into this role. And the president of the company, who is this was like a $3 billion company. It's a big company, but he's somebody that I would have to work with. The president of the company said, "Not right now." He kind of held off on approving the decision, and we couldn't really tell why necessarily. Well, one day it was kind of late in the day, and I was in his office with a couple of other senior executives, and it was just one of those, I don't know, maybe I had a long day, I don't know what it was, but I felt a little more relaxed because I used to stand on ceremony with him because I felt that that was what the culture wanted and that's what I should be doing. Well, I felt a little more relaxed in this meeting. I was joking around and kidding around, and the meeting ended, and the number two guy in the company followed me out the door, and he said, "By the way, if you had done that more often, then you would have gotten the promotion already." He said, "Make sure that," or he was suggesting that I just act more like myself, that I act like somebody who isn't afraid to have a conversation with somebody, who isn't so measured in my words and worrying what somebody's going to think about every other word that comes out of my mouth, and just be myself. So I was able to make that change, and I eventually got the promotion. But that's what was standing in the way of me getting promoted. And then since then, I'd also found that in my role as a communicator, I led communications departments at three large companies. And I found that as I built that relationship as a trusted advisor with senior executives, it was through dealing with them and working with them as other people, asking them, "How was your weekend?" Nobody ever asked the CEO, "How was your weekend?" They have weekends. They like talking about weekends and things that they do. And by doing that and setting yourself apart as somebody who isn't afraid to do that, makes you somebody that they want to go ahead and talk to and engage with. So you're better able to talk to them about your work, but then after a while, you'll also find out, or you'll also realize that you're starting to talk about maybe some other things as well, not just, you know, weekend stuff or your work stuff, but maybe some other things that are going on in the company as well. And you're thinking to yourself, well, they're kind of seeking out my opinion on things now because I'm an easy person for them to talk to. And I'm one of the few people who in this company who they like speaking with because I treat them like a human being. And so that helps distinguish yourself and elevate yourself into that advisor role with senior members of the organization. So I would definitely encourage that. That was something that held me back at one point in my career, but then when I figured it out, it helped me advance.
That's a great story. It's a great story. We've been speaking a lot about like what you say and like you're saying, like, you know, how you say it to those executives or people on your team communicate. But can you speak, you know, it's not just what you say, right? Like there's so many other parts. So could you speak a little bit about the role of nonverbal communication in the workplace and what are common mistakes that people make there?
Yeah. So one of my number one rules of communication is that everything communicates. So it's not just what you're saying, but it's also what you're doing. And it's also what you're not doing as well. So for example, if you decide that there's something going on and you eventually need to communicate about it, but you're not quite ready and you keep postponing communicating about it, well, in your mind, you're thinking about communication, but on the other end, they're hearing nothing. Radio silence. And so they are left to start figuring or to start thinking okay, well, what's going on? And they're coming up with stories that are never as good as what the actual story is. So being silent isn't a good idea. The other things that can communicate inadvertently are some of your actions as well. And I'll tell you a story about a team that was working remotely. They were working virtually, and this was an IT department, and the department leadership team was strategizing over a new move they wanted to make with the department, but they weren't ready to communicate about it yet. But they were in a bunch of long meetings about it, and the rest of the department could see on the online scheduling tool that people were blocked for half days and full days at a time all together. But they never knew what the meeting was about, but they could see that something out there was going on. So the fact of them, the very act of them booking long online meetings that other people could see on the online scheduling tool, that was an act of communication, because people were then able to see, well, why are they all huddling off someplace all the time? Something must be going on. And then the rumors began, and it kind of got out of control. And then the leadership team found out about it, and they had to communicate something before they were ready. And it was kind of a mess. So understanding that some of the things that you're doing, you're actually, even though you don't think you're communicating, you actually are. Then there's, you know, the good old fashioned body language as well. So if you're working
remotely,
and this is,
go ahead.
Okay.
Please go ahead.
Well, if you're working remotely, we're over the last several years, we've all had to get used to being in front of a camera and having this machine looking at us constantly. So it helps to definitely to if you want to continue to make eye contact with people, if I'm looking at you on the screen, I'm looking right at your face, and I'm making eye contact with you from my perspective. But I bet you're not seeing that right now. You see it because I'm not looking at the camera. I have to come up and look like this to have eye contact with you. I can see you off to the side, kind of nodding your head. But if I really want to make sure I'm having eye contact with you and get my message across, I have to look at this little inanimate object that's perched on top of my monitor right now. So thinking about those things, because that will help you come across as more engaging and more personal. Limited hand gestures. They have to be limited. You can't be going like crazy like this, because then you come across as kind of a crazy person. But limited hand gestures can help you reinforce your the points that you're making. If somebody else is talking, make sure that as they're speaking to you and they assume that you have their attention, you're not kind of, you know, looking out the window or kind of down at your phone or anything like that. You might not realize you're doing it, but the other person sure sees that. And that could be really, really disconcerting. So that's those are some things we need to keep in mind when we're remote. When we're in person, a lot of it also has to do with kind of how we're sitting. If we're more upfront in our chair, or if we're a little more relaxed like this. Now, I'm not going to do this on this call because I'm not sitting with you in the same room, and this doesn't really look that great on camera. So I have to sit a little bit higher up in my chair and make sure that I'm having eye contact with you through the camera. But if I'm in a room with somebody else and I want to be relaxed and I want to show that I'm calm and cool and in a position of, you know, of authority and so forth, yeah, I might sit back and relax and engage with
like
you.
Lean from, back like this you're doing point there. Of view. Like well. Leaning back, yes.
Exactly. Yeah. So I can do that in person and that would be fine, but it looks terrible right now on camera, doesn't it? Because because we're not engaged. I'm off to the side. I look like I'm about to fall over.
It's actually a little harder to do as you're away from the microphone.
Well, but right. But yeah. Well, that's another consideration as well, is we need to make sure we understand that as we're having these conversations remotely, we're also using AV equipment, which, as we all know, doesn't always go so particularly smoothly. But I have to understand that this microphone that I have hears me from this angle. If I go like this, I bet you can't hear me very well right now, right? So I have to know that I can't. Yeah, so I have to know that I can't come around like this if I want to make a point. I have to stay over here. So we all need to know how our stuff works. I hate to say it, but if these are the little nitpicky things that we have to understand as we are in this remote electronic communication age.
Okay. Gary, this has been really good. Is there anything about communication, any mistakes to avoid or advice you'd like to share that I didn't ask you about?
You know, it all comes down to, again, and I guess I'll repeat myself, but it all comes down to knowing the objective of your communication, understanding why you are out there communicating and what you want people to do about it. If you don't have clear answers to that, then take a step back and figure out what it is, and then go ahead and communicate, and it'll be a lot more effective. So keep that in mind. The other thing too, actually, this is another piece that is probably worth talking about. One of the training courses, so I do communications training, and one of the training courses that I do is on filler words, and it's reducing filler words. So reducing the amount of ums and ahs and likes and you knows and that stuff that comes across. Now, we all do that, and we are never going to 100% eliminate it. So don't get hung up if every now and then you catch yourself saying or ah or you know. It becomes a problem when it gets distracting. And if it becomes distracting, then it's time to sit back and say, okay, well, why is this happening? Am I not prepared? Am I lacking confidence? And so forth. So if there is a time where you feel or you've been told by others that it's becoming distracting, then yeah, you can seek out some help on helping to eliminate that. But just don't get caught up if every now and then somebody you feel yourself saying it's not worth obsessing over. It's only a problem if people notice it.
It's interesting you mentioned this. Earlier in my career, I was a member of Toastmasters. And Toastmasters, they actually count these things and they train you not to say them.
I hate that.
Oh, you don't like that?
Because no. It bothers me. Now, I'm not a part of Toastmasters, and so maybe I should be. I don't know. But I don't think that's helpful. Why is it helpful for me to sit back and, aha, you said 27 times in the last 10 minutes. I gotcha. No, I'm going to approach it from being a supportive person and say, we're not going to 100% eliminate that from anybody's vocabulary. It's just not going to happen, number one. Number two, it's only a problem if it becomes distracting. Let's find out why it's happening, get to the root causes of it, and then learn some tricks to avoid it as well and deal from it from a positive point of view, not like, aha, I caught you. You said, that's bad.
Well, yeah.
I don't like that point of view.
Okay.
But that's just me.
That's fine. I've noticed I've fallen back on that sometimes, and it's not good. I think there's another issue with it, which I've become recently aware of. I believe if you use these kind of words a lot, it also makes you sound less confident.
Mm-hmm.
You agree with that?
Yeah, and I think it's because you are less confident.
Right, because you're like, well, you know, sort of, that's not good.
Because you're trying to figure out what to say. So, right. And sometimes it's your mind is racing a little faster than your mouth, and so you're not entirely in sync and so forth. So that can be one of the reasons why that happens.
Yes. I believe it can give an impression of lack of confidence, besides also being distracting, like you mentioned. Gary, you've been really generous with your time. Thank you so much for coming on to the show today. If people wanted to reach out to you afterwards, and I see you have your sign behind you, what would be the best way for them to reach you, to talk more?
So the website, insidecomms.com is my main website. Plus.insidecomms.com goes to my e-learning website. I have 11 workplace communication e-learning courses that are available there. I also do those courses and some additional ones, both in live, virtual, and in-person formats, and can also do custom e-learning for folks as well. There's team discounts that are available if teams want to purchase the e-learning and so forth. So go ahead and check it out.
Awesome. Thanks again so much. It's been great to have you here. Really appreciate it.
I've really enjoyed it. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.